Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, it's the Anfield Wrap. It's John Gibbons hosting, and I'm delighted to be joined by Mike Kearney, by Kev Walsh, and by Amelia Bonnet. Delighted because I'm with beautiful people, and also the Reds have got off to a fantastic start. 3-0 wins at Norwich, and as we learned over the weekend, away wins on the opening weekend of the season aren't for everyone. But we'll talk about Liverpool's, because a great win for the Reds. But first of all, Kev, me and you didn't get to go. Scuppered by weddings, different. But boss to see fans back in the ground. Like, as Jürgen says, even seeing the Norwich ends full was great. But, you know, seeing a lot of our friends, a lot of people we know on the telly, it seems, and all the pictures and stuff, it was just boss.
Yeah, I think I've seen more of my mates than I've seen of Mo Salah. As soon as the crowd shot, come on, I was like, that positivity I can find here. It was like a boss game at Guess Who. But obviously the players loved it as well, didn't even. I think it was someone was saying last year about Jota not celebrating. I think Ben Jones said it to Neil or something, and he was like, well, why would he celebrate? There's no one in the crowd. And he got his goal, and even he celebrated, didn't he? So it's just boss to see everyone back in. It's just like a lovely, warm, fuzzy feeling. Warm, fuzzy feeling. I watched all the games over the weekend that I could as well, and every game was just sad. Like, it was just really nice to have football fans back in the ground.
Yeah, I even enjoyed Old Trafford, and that is saying something. That'll never last. And some Rob and Steve action on the telly arena. At least you were there.
No, I know. I was like, okay, good. We watched Match of the Day together last night when he got back, and the clip of him and Rob celebrating was in that as well. And I was like, I've never seen you look that happy. And then he was like, what do you mean? I was like, even when I'm with you at the match, you don't look as happy as you look with Rob there. And he's like, yeah, it's completely fair. Oh, it's true.
It's first game.
Yeah, no,
back.
And I don't blame him at all. Rob's better company.
Big game of mates, Mike, on all the pitches and stuff. But it was boss to see it. And hearing the stories, I made up, Kivas wrote something really nice in the Athletic today about the Irregulars bus, which is the one me and Kev are often sort of found on, in body, if not spirit. just hearing about everyone having a lovely day was dead nice.
I was made up for them all. I was slightly a little bit jealous that it was away first and not, you know, not Burnley. I went to the Bilbao game and it was like there's only 40 in, but it's the first one back in ages, and it's just the anticipation of I remember this, it was boss, wasn't it? And now we're getting it again. It's great, and I think you can see a difference in the players. I know it was hard for them all through the pandemic and stuff like that, no crowds, and you know, there's it's just different, isn't it? I don't know what's the best way I can put it. I know it was half funny and good hearing the shouts and stuff like that from Henderson and Fabinho and all them, but it's the soundtrack of football like that we've all been used to, and it's great to have it back. And you know, all them things you can still pick up on, I suppose. But hopefully now this is it, and we're back full time, and everyone gets to go again and have the first day back, and you know, the first let off, and because there was a few goals over the weekend there. I know Leeds ends up getting walloped, but when the equaliser goes in, it goes off in their end, like, because it's a big derby. And it was nice to hear that, you know, the Reds obviously had to scream, and it sounds a great side. Unfortunately, never went, but it's good to hear them again.
I was surprised by how excited I was as well. Like you said about Jürgen listening to Norwich fans, like, which isn't something I thought I'd ever say, but like they didn't have much to get excited about. But when they had moments where they did, like, hearing both sides of it that makes it exciting. I know we had fans in the ground at points over the last year, but it's not quite the same as hearing either side of it and how it kind of worked. I don't know, it was just special.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And the Reds were pretty good as well, Kev. Norwich at the moment, as they're always going to, sort of first game back and stuff, but I thought largely, you know, Liverpool were in control of the game and were the winners.
Yeah, we looked like a team who'd had a great pre-season, didn't we?
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly the team. Well, I know we were talking the other day. It wasn't the team I expected. You said you weren't necessarily thinking Fabinho was going to start. But I looked at the midfield and thought, well, I think that probably talks to what Jürgen thinks of Norwich, really. I know he's never disrespectful to anybody, and he'll always pick a team to win. But he probably thought, well, yeah, this is probably a little bit more of a game where I can bring these players in and maybe get them. I'm not thinking they're coming in just to get minutes, because obviously you need to win the first game. Otherwise, we can be in shit street. Hopefully, like Man City are going to find themselves. But it was just Norwich away on the first game of the season, it's one of the ones where you go, well, could be tricky this, and then as soon as you get the first one, you think we'll absolutely blatter these. And that's exactly the way it turned out, didn't it? We had everyone just looked like they knew exactly what they were supposed to be doing. And I've had a few shouts about a few players who maybe didn't have the best of games, but I thought everyone done all right, you know what I mean? We done exactly what we needed to do. We played the game we needed to play. They had that one chance where Alisson makes a triple save, but even if that goes in, it's 3-1. They're never going to get back into
it. No one's below seven, are they? Everyone's absolutely on the game. Like.
And that's exactly how you end up getting like a 3-0 away winner on a newly promoted team, isn't it? You don't have to be. If you're a 10 out of 10, you can beat them 6 or 7-0, and that's sound. But you only get 3 points for that. Mm. You know what I mean? I thought it was a great game from everyone who played, and obviously the substitutions all worked perfectly as well. So yeah, all in all, first game of the season to win 3-0 away from home, you can't argue with that.
Well, let's go through the team then, and we'll start at the front, because strikers are the best, aren't they?
No, goalies are the best.
We'll finish on him, because he did do something absolutely brilliant, as you've just said. But on the forwards then, he goes for the three. You've had the biggest pre-season, and I think, as Kev says, Emilio, that's a bit of a theme, you know, of his team generally. You know, Jota, Salah and Mane, you know, have had the full pre-season with them, and that's what he go for. And two of the three of them score. It's a shame. They're all desperate for Mane to score at the end, but two of the three, you know, do score. And, you know, it's great to see. You know, forwards want to get off the mark, don't they, as quickly as possible. And Salah's an expert at that now, it seems, 5 seasons on a run. But great for Trossard as well, especially playing number 9.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big shout, but I don't think there's a player for Liverpool at the minute that excites me more than Diogo Jota. And I think it's because he came as such a surprise to me, both in terms of us signing him, that it kind of was like a footnote to Thiago, but also every single time I've seen him, I've been so excited by him. And I think he's absolutely incredible. And I guess, I mean, I suppose is... The front three have been the front three and have been such an accepted and established thing that you just say the front three and there's no questions around it for so long. And I don't know at what point that changes and it becomes the front four and we talk about who starts, because it was the right decision. I know obviously it's a decision that's made because Bobby's been away and couldn't do a full 90 minutes. But I mean, he could have, but it wasn't the right thing to do. But yeah, I think Diogo Jota is brilliant and I'd like to see him start in a lot more games this season.
Yeah, he does everything he needs to. You know, there's a funny stat that pops up halfway through the first half where he's 22nd, I think, on the pitch for touches, but first on goals, Mike, which I mean, it's efficient, isn't it? Let's be honest. But that is a nines, you know what I mean? You know, you look at the nines around the league and we've been a bit spoiled really on Bobby, and well, not necessarily spoiled with him, but you know, a number nine sort of what you're used to seeing, which is Bobby sort of so in the game, but that's actually a little bit more normal, isn't it, what Jota did for those 60 minutes on, which is take your time, make sure you're in the place when it matters and you're better the chance you get.
Yeah, I mean, not just Jota as well though, Firmino's in the right place, isn't he? From, I mean, it's a superb ball from Salah to pick him out, and it's just an easy goal. They look easy goals, don't they? But if you're not there, they're not goals. So, and it's sort of a bit of a criticism we've had labelled ours as a team, haven't we, by other fans and by some of our own, at Firmino or Jota, whoever has been, not being a nine, and to see them doing it, I don't know what's happened tactically. It'll all unfold over the season to see what's different. But, you know, having them there and taking the chances, it's only positives. I just think we're going to score a lot of goals this season. Like, I think back to when Klopp first comes in and there are a couple of mad games and that, but we scored a lot, and then we sort of tighten up a bit and we don't score as many. But, you know, they share it around. And, all right, Mane doesn't have the best of seasons last season in terms of his output, but I think all four of them are getting in double figures, you know, possibly three of them even into the 20s, because I just think there's chances are going to be made of plenty this season. And the way they're starting, they just look sharp. I mean, Salah nearly scores he's having his own competition in one game for goal of the month / goal of the season. The volley he just misses from the cross, his actual goal is really well taken. I know you probably question marks around the keeper on Jota's one, maybe if that's us. Thankfully it's not, because ours is the best in the world. Like, but they're scoring goals. We've got three on the first day, we've got Burnley next, so see how that goes. But they're all going to be weighed in big time for goals this year, I think.
I think with Jota, sorry, just before you go on, it's interesting he's 22nd on the pitch for touches, but first for goals. And if you think about it, for the last 18 months, Firmino's probably been the exact opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zero goals, but all the touches. And I think it probably speaks to the fact that Jota plays more as a real number nine.
Nearly has two as well. The header's really well saved by Crew.
Yeah, it's a good save. And even his finish, I know the goalie has to make a decision there, because if he's going to slam it from 7 yards, if you're not already moving, it's gone past you. And he's just been a little bit unlucky with the way he's gone and the way the ball's gone in. But for a number nine, for any other team in the world except Liverpool, you'd say that's the way to play the game. You don't want your number nine having 1,000 touches in the centre circle because he's not close enough to the goal. Whereas if Bobby's in that position, you say, well, that's all right, because what he does is he feeds the others in there. I think it's nice for us to have that little change where, you know, it's a like for like in terms of number nine, but really it's not. You're probably playing Bobby more as a very forward-paced midfielder as an attacker, whereas you're playing Jota as, I'm going to be in the box and I'm going to be between the sticks and I'll get the goals. And sometimes that's what we'll need, and it's nice to have them options now.
But I'll stick with you, Kev, because Mike makes a good point that actually both the number nine goals are proper number nine goals, aren't they? And it's nice to see them sort of both in there. You know, Jota's sniffing, you know, gets the break and sort of, you know, it's a sharp finish. And I agree with you, I won't be too harsh on the keeper, because when someone hits hard and low, first time, boom, then you're just sort of hoping to get lucky effectively there, aren't you? And I think Bobby's is a real sort of stylish finish as well, but he's great that he's sort of in there. And I'm really excited about Bobby next this season. I know you love Bobby F, don't you, showman like yourself? But I think he's going to be great this year. I'm really hopeful.
Yeah, and it's weird for me, you know, obviously last season he sort of come alive at the end of it, didn't he? But this year, you've got the dual thing of, he doesn't have to play every game. He's not going to necessarily be slogged to death. And as we said, he's a player who gets a lot of touches, he moves into a lot of space. So his game's not necessarily based on, okay, I'll have a breather now. It's based on, I'm going to have to go and get this ball back and I'll win it and I'll put it there. And I think, obviously, he's the one out of all of our players, we'll all probably agree that the fans will have the biggest effect on him, because our fans love him. Do you know what I mean? Even, like, obviously you get people criticising him on social media or whatever, but in the ground there's no better goal than a Bobby goal, because his song goes off for ages, doesn't it? And it gets everybody going, and you can see he just absolutely loves that. Yeah, he absolutely loves it. And I think the fact that he's getting on to 30 odd, and he's probably not one of these players who's going to play till 35, because I'm not sure I think it's fair to say he probably likes to party as well off the pitch, you know what I mean? And that's absolutely fine. So it'll probably work in his favour to maybe play a few less games, but be sharper when he actually does play, than to be slogging the guts out of him all season. Whereas with the likes of Mane and Salah, that'd work against them, because they need that rhythm, they need to be always in the game, they need to always feel like they're the number one. Mm. Whereas Bobby's sort of, he's happier, not happier out of the limelight, and obviously he'll want to play the games, but I don't think it'll have as big an effect on him with having Jota playing for his position. And obviously Jota is absolutely desperate to play the games. So create a nice little bit of a competition between them two, while leaving the other two basically free to do whatever they want to do, which is perfect, because it definitely is a front four now, isn't it? It's a confirmed front four. And for going forward for the rest of the season, you think to yourself, if you're in one of them games where you're going, it's just not going right for us here, this is just not working, whichever one of Bobby or Jota is on the bench and you bring them on, you just think, if you're the opposition, what are we going to do now? Because it's totally going to change the way that they play.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Mo Salah then. Let me count the ways. It's two assists and a goal. I think the first one is a bit of a fluke, I think it's fair to say, but the second one very much isn't. You know, the assist for Firmino. It's brilliant technique, and Mike before talks about his technique and the one on the volley and stuff, and I think it's something that is almost a bit underrated in his game, in that I think 9 Premier League players out of 10 take a touch on that when it comes to him, because it's not a pass. You know, Mane's trying to shoot and it sort of bounces to him, and I think most players take a touch there, but he just backs himself to just slide it across straight first time for Firmino, and that's what makes the goal, because if you take a touch then suddenly the defenders are able to get back. And he just always impresses me so much with his ability on the ball, and you can talk about his pace and his goal scoring and things like that, and a lot of that's obviously, you know, built on his technique as well. But yeah, just what he's able to do with the ball, especially first time, you know, is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, there's no one else like him in the Premier League or otherwise, to be honest, and we're incredibly lucky to have him and to still have him. But I think what I like the most about, I mean, obviously the goal is incredible and I like that the most, but after that is, as you say, that he's trying to help Mane. And I think often you can see Salah, and I suppose this happens more towards the end of the season when he's looking at how many goals he's got compared to other players in the Premier League, but he sometimes gets in his own head or gets frustrated and is so kind of like tunnel visioned onto wanting to get his goal that it almost throws everything else off around him, and it kind of, he becomes so focused on that the rest of the game doesn't quite work as we'd like it to. And I think it's nice that he was he gets his goal and then he wants to help Mane score and he wants to kind of like help the others around him, rather than he can just get so focused on it and he gets so annoyed at himself. And like when he then gets taken off, when he hasn't achieved what he wants to achieve in the 90 minutes, he's fuming. So it was nice to see the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, yeah, a perfect day for him. And it's some goal as well, Michael. It's great because he's scored about 20 of them just over the last sort of two seasons. But it's one thing knowing what he's going to do, it's another thing stopping it. And it's just the boom, the shift, and it's past the goalie, you know, before anyone can do anything about it.
It's the mark of actual world class, isn't it? Being able to do it and do it and do it. And then, like as you say, people know he's doing it and you just can't stop it because he's that good at it. And it doesn't matter. Like, it just feels like autopilot, doesn't it? He must know there's goalkeepers know the angles of the goal. He must know the angles of the pitch without even having to look up sometimes. If you've seen like a certain spot on the pitch or like a marker of the penalty area or whatever, he must know. I know where the goal is, and I know if I shift this and just do it, it's what's they call it? Like muscle memory. Yeah. So like you do anything often enough, you just do it without thinking, and he doesn't have to think because he knows. Well, if I hit this the right way every single time, it's going to be a world class save to stop me. It's going to be in the corner. And does it hit the post on the way in, or does it?
No, just straight.
It's just straight in. The noise it made, it was like, it didn't sound like he slammed it, but there was well enough. Like you would never get near it, never get near it. And if he'd got a fingertip to it, it wouldn't have pushed it wide because it was just, it was true. Like there was no, like you said with the pass before, he knows what he's doing. And like we know what we're doing sometimes, don't we, when we play football? But like 3 times out of 10 it happens for us, like 9 times out of 10 it happens for
him. 3 times out of 10 for you, maybe, Lan, not for me.
it's just the absolute, like that. I think that's what we'll never see, the training. He must do that at least 4 or 5 times a session in training, like for it to be that easy to do it in a match. I know we're 2-0 up at the time, but we've seen him do it all over the place in different circumstances of games, different pressure points and stuff like that, and there's no stopping him. And I like, players have a short career, don't they? But I can see Mo Salah playing until he's at least 38.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if he does use the yards of pace, he's still absolutely rapid, and he's still got the strength and the technique and all the power to go on and sort of, I don't know, I don't really want to say emulate Ronaldo because I don't like him. but Mo Salah's going to be something else, and hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, all the contracts that we've signed at least recently, hopefully he's the next one, because he's, you know, like I said the other day after the Bilbao game, it just stinks of goals for him this season. Yeah. Every season he started, like I said before, didn't you, five seasons in a row, yeah. Goal on the first game, scored the hat-trick last year, only gets one this year, but it's going to be someone who scores a lot of goals that beats Mo Salah to the Golden Boot this year.
Absolutely, and we are lucky to have him. As Amelia said before, Kevin, it's funny, one of the things I'm looking forward to most next week when we get into Burnley is just watching him in the flesh again, because you know, you realise with that break just how lucky you are we've got these world class athletes, not even just footballers, like sports people on our doorstep. You know, he's literally on your doorstep. You can walk up to Anfield in the same postcode and all that and watch them, and how lucky we've been over the years. And yeah, I can't wait to watch all of them, but very much him.
Yeah, it's funny with Salah because he's that good that I was watching it the other day and I was thinking, who's been my man in the match here? And I was going through and I was thinking, Tsimikas has done really well. What a game he's had. Mm. I was thinking, Trent hasn't half done well. He's had a lot of space over there. And then I was just like, it's funny, I didn't even consider Mo, because it's like, it was expected. It's his standard that he's supplied 2 goals and he scored a worldie as well. And I thought, yeah, you realise you're spoiled with him. And one of the best things about this season is going to be when he signs his new deal. And I think he will as well. Because we've got like a perfect storm with him now. I'm not sure there's other clubs that can afford him. But there's not many other clubs that can afford him who we'd happily let him go to. So you're talking probably Chelsea, Man City, they could definitely afford him. Man United could afford him. We're never going to sell to any of them. PSG, they've just obviously pumped their loads into Leo Messi, haven't he? And I'd be surprised if they can get away with any more of that. Listen, maybe they can, because they treat FFP like a joke, don't they? But the big Spanish teams, I think, is probably where he wanted to go, where he's seen his career sort of heading. and it's just not a thing at the moment, is it? It's just like, I'm not sure when that ever gets back to being. I think it probably will, because they're all
I just don't get it with him, you know what? Like, I just feel that he's every time he's had an opportunity to, without being prompted, he's just gone, yeah, I'm happy here. It's really good. I love it here.
But that has surprised me. I didn't think we'd still have him. I really, really didn't. I thought of the front three, or like any of kind of the players like him that were going to be gone, I thought he'd be, yeah.
I think he made a few noises, and I think not less so him, more of his agent, but let's face it, that's the agent over the player, isn't it? But the perfect storms happen where them two options have basically been obliterated. Now, there's no way he's going to Real Madrid or Barcelona anytime soon. And so Liverpool get to offer him what will be an absolute mega deal, and it's great to see Liverpool offering them deals to players like that, because, as we've all said, he's probably the best striker in the world at the moment. Yeah. There's nobody to touch him. Mm. I wouldn't swap him for Harry Kane. Listen, if you offered me Kylian Mbappe and Mo Salah, and you just said you're going to reach for one season, I'd keep Mo Salah. I genuinely would. The only thing Kylian Mbappe's got over him at the moment is the fact that he's 5 years younger than him.
Yeah.
So he's got like a trajectory that goes probably stratospheric. But Mo Salah keeps improving and improving. And if Saturday's performance is anything to go by, not just goal scoring, but assists, and his assist numbers are good anyway. But he was like going out of his way to try and get Mane a goal the other day. Yeah. Whereas last couple of seasons, it looked like then two would have gone out of the way to, you know what I mean, they wouldn't want to talk to each other, would
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
Whereas now, he's going for that as well. So, listen, if all that harmony's in there, mate, there's going to be some tough times for some defences this year.
What did you make of Mane, Mike? Because he's the only one who doesn't get a goal. Had a decent little run in terms of pre-season goals. Doesn't get one this time. But I thought, you know, personally, he contributed pretty well as well. And, you know, maybe it'll be his turn next week.
I think he's sharp. I think they're all sharp. That's what the main thing we've took out of pre-season is, a lot of them have had a break, like Sadio Mane and Mo Salah and them have had the first big break, like not playing in international tournaments or, you know, come back off injury or whatever. They've had an absolute, like, what was it, 7-8 week holiday, back in full pre-season, no injuries, and they're just sharp, as you would be doing double sessions with Jürgen Klopp and on all them fitness absolute maddies.
That's a technical term.
Yeah. But I just... Mane's always been to me... You've had Salah, obviously, who's the absolute standout. And they both get 22 Premier League goals. It does feel a bit like Mane still was a little bit underappreciated,
yeah.
Weirdly. I don't know what it is, maybe because it doesn't look like it's... So you used to have the thing with Eden Hazard and you're in the Premier League because he looked like what they'd say more of a footballer. I don't get it myself, because I like his numbers in the Premier League were nowhere near what Salah or Mane's was that season. They both get 22, but yet there's still some people out there who think he just looks a bit silkier. I'm the best thing about Mane for me is that if he's not going to know what he's going to do, but he's like, it doesn't look like he does, but he definitely does, sort of thing, if that makes any sense. Defenders can't, they haven't got a clue. So strong. They're only about 5'8", 5'9", the pair of them. But there's just no stopping them. Because there's a couple of times there, on Saturday, where he's like, I've got the run of this kid, at Max Aarons. And he's like, I just know I've got him.
Mm.
And you could see him, basically saying to him in his body language, you do what you want to do, and then I'll just beat you anyway. And just being able to have the supreme confidence in yourself to do that, there was times that season where he said, didn't he, like, I don't know what's wrong, but I think that's gone now, and I think he will, you know, the goals will come for him, and when they do, like, if you're stopping Salah from scoring, you think he's doing a good job, Jota will pop up, and if Jota doesn't, Mane will. Mane doesn't, Firmino will. Like, there will be a game, obviously, at some point this season where we might have a nil on for 90 minutes, but...
we'll get one in the 90 seconds.
Yeah. I wouldn't even like to be thinking about how to stop Liverpool Football Club at the minute.
Are you at the point, Amelia, where you could just pick any three of the four and you're like, sand?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think I know we'll get onto the midfield, but seeing the midfield is a bit like... But, I mean, I don't know what else I would have wanted, but... yeah, you could show me any three of them, any combination of, and I'd be absolutely over the moon, because they all fill me with the same mix of confidence and excitement, so, and joy, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the midfield then. Let's talk about your...
That was a little bit more of like a...
I do apologise.
Not like a full one. Yeah. I over-egged it.
I mean, it should be pointed out that there's a whole other midfield to come back for Liverpool. Yeah. So obviously Fabinho comes off the bench. Thiago and Henderson, we learned this morning, played at Anfield, which is mad. But had a little kick around there, and apparently really enjoyed themselves. And so there's others come back. He goes with the guys again who've had the source of the pre-season. What did you make of them in terms of, you know, having watched them? Because I think we were all a little bit surprised by the team. You know, Kev mentioned before that I wasn't necessarily expecting Fabinho to start, but I thought he might be tempted to go with the Milner, Keita, Harvey Elliott sort of team that played, you know, so many of the pre-season ones. He throws Chamberlain in there. What did you make of sort of how they did in terms of, you know, both collectively and individually?
Well, I think that, so it's probably unfair to say it's a bit of a cobble together midfield, because when we look at like some situations that we had at the back last season,
yeah, I'll
like
show you some
cobble together means something else. Do you know what I mean? But as in, if that is a cobble together midfield where I'm a bit like, oh, so like when I see it, then that is absolutely fine. And I think the point is that if they perform like that and it's that absolutely sound with so much more left in the tank, both in terms of like players that they, well, one player that they then brought on and players that will also be available kind of Burnley onwards or a bit later for some of them, then there is nothing to worry about. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I always just want to do a little bit better. Not that he's not doing absolutely brilliantly, I just want to be as excited by him and amazed by him as I was before he was injured. And I think there's, I don't know if since he's come back I've ever, I mean, like he's had amazing moments, obviously, and been absolutely brilliant. But I guess since he's come back, I've never been quite as taken by him as I was before he was injured. And I don't know whether that's just because I'm looking at him and going, oh, he's not been the same since he's come back. Because he obviously has been. I just, you know.
No, I'm with you in that. I think he always looks a bit sad when he gets taken off. And it's not as sad as in, like, annoyed at Jürgen. It's almost like, oh, I wish I'd done a bit more there. I think he sort of feels it himself. And that's not to say that he can't get back there. But I think he's, as I say, like, I mean, this is me looking massively into someone's face quickly on a screen. But he always looks a bit like, oh.
But he's never quite fulfilled the potential that he knows he has and that we've seen him have. And I guess he kind of wants to show that he is still that player, I guess. And like, obviously he was great, and I thought Naby was really good, like, for a mixture of reasons, most of them injury related. I've never gotten to see enough of Naby to form a full opinion of him, to be honest. And I know we've seen a lot of him, but I've never quite, I'm not at the Rob Gutman level, and I'm also kind of not elsewhere. But I am, yeah, I thought he was good. I liked when he helped the front four, and it was good to see him. I'd like to see a bit more of him to be able to make a full opinion, to be honest, because it's the first game of the season, so I can't go, Naby Keita is going to be brilliant for us this season, because he might be out for another X number of weeks, so who knows.
I think as soon as Fabinho was on the bench, Kev, it was always going to be one of them where people go, fuck, get Fabinho on here. That's always the way, isn't it?
It is, but I think it's a funny midfield, because I think everyone done the same thing as you, really, where you go, but then you go, well, it's Norwich, they're a newly promoted team. I know we're away to them, and I know they got fans in that, but what you want from your midfield, what specifically Liverpool want from their midfield and what other teams want from their midfields, I think is two totally different things. You can't really have a front three like we have and then expect your midfielders, especially the likes of, like, Naby Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain would be great in, say, a Man United midfield where they're given that sort of freedom and license to roam. And he could do, maybe take a little bit more time on the ball, maybe just, they've got a little bit more angle to pass, whereas for us, it's more functional. So you're asking players who are probably a lot more naturally attacking to do the dirty work. Now, James Milner, he loves all that, doesn't he? He rolls his sleeves up anytime, excuse me, and go right at it. Whereas I think for Oxlade-Chamberlain, specifically Oxlade-Chamberlain, really, because I really, really like him. I think he's a boss player, but he's just, he needs 10 games in the midfield, and I'm just not sure he's ever going to get it, because how do you get 10 games in Liverpool's midfield? But again, if you played him with Fabinho and Henderson, I think you'd just see a totally different player, and I think he'd have a lot more fun. And I agree with you, John. When he comes off, you just look at him and it feels like he's frustrated with himself. Yeah. But you just want to say to him, it's all right, lad. Do you know what I mean? None of our midfielders do that. And I think in a midfield that's a little bit more based around them, he'd score the goals. But you've got to temper that. I thought Saturday's performance was perfectly fine. It wasn't off the scale 9 out of 10, brilliant, but it wasn't a 4 or a 5 either, where you're going, oh, we can't be having that anymore. It was a performance that was needed to beat a team like Norwich, and sometimes that's all you need. 3-0 away from home, no problems whatsoever. Keita, broadly the same. Sometimes he flashes in and out of the midfield a little bit for my liking, and I'd like to see him a little bit more consistent. But again, when he's done everything he needs to do on Saturday, he hasn't put a foot wrong, really. And what I think what people are wanting from them is like more like attacking and goal scoring. But then if they're getting into that position, the likelihood is they're going to be in the way of the front three, or even worse, we're not going to get the ball to the front three quick enough. So you're going to find them carrying the ball through a midfield, which allows the other teams to just get back into two banks of four, and before you know, there's no space for anyone to get in there. So our midfield's more about the function of take the ball off them, give it to the wide players 9 times out of 10, and let the wide players feed the attackers, and it's worked perfectly for us for 3 or 4 years. So I think sometimes with the midfield, you've got to just think, what does Jürgen want them to do rather than what do I want them to do?
Yeah, it's a good shout that by Kev Mike, and that I thought it was quite a Wijnaldum performance from Keita. And, you know, admittedly, Keita needs to do another 30 in a row now. that's what Wijnaldum did, didn't he? You know, in 8 weeks. But it was, you know, it was a very, as Kev says there, sort of Liverpool style midfield performance, wasn't it? There wasn't sort of five things that I can throw out to you now and go, oh, that was brilliant what he did. But, you know, he won the ball well, he pressed well, you know, he functioned, you know, as part of the team. And yet I thought it was a solid performance from Naby.
Yeah, what did surprise me is he was taking the ball a lot deeper than he normally does. I'd say in the midfield, he was a bit more of the, I don't know, maybe he felt more responsible. Even though I think, I'm not wrong in saying, I think Chamberlain and Keita are similar ages, if not the exact same, 25, 26, something like that.
I think he was better today, wasn't he? Actually, Chamberlain's better yesterday.
Was he?
No idea how old he was, though, sorry, lads.
Sorry, Kev. So I've never got my cake there, like.
I've got Neville Chamberlain.
Is he any good in centre midfield, though?
He's 28 the other day, Chamberlain, so he's a little bit older. I think Keita's, it's interesting because, you know, he was doing a little bit more of that during the pre-season games, and I think he was quite enjoying being, like, what you call, like, the second midfielder, Mike, and that, you know, he's in the past, he's very much been the one who's been expected to get forward. But playing next to Elliot, I think he was being a bit more of the mature one. Yeah. I think he's carried that into the season.
Yeah, and maybe that will stand him in good stead. Hopefully, just, you know, it's the consistency of him staying fit, isn't it? And if he does, which, you know, I think the season might be, I don't want to speak too soon, and he might, you know, footballers get injuries. That's the way of the world, isn't it? But if he does stay as fit as he's ever been at Liverpool, he'll get the most games he's ever had at Liverpool. It's as simple as that for me. He's a part of the squad. The fact that he can be used as that sort of player he was yesterday, but also as maybe a bit more of a, you know, a forward. You know, you put Thiago and Fabinho next to him there, or Henderson, and you'd think that, all right, we might see a bit more from Naby going forward today. I think it's nice to have these options, and, you know, it's having them that's the problem, isn't it? If he's there, you can use him, but if he's not, you can't, and it's not really his fault. It's his body, and I don't know, did he feel, to anyone else, that he sort of has a bit more trust in his body? Because he was throwing himself into tackles yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's me just thinking, well, oh, it's nice to see him throwing himself into tackles and winning the ball back. He's always been a good presser. But he was putting himself into 50-50s and stuff like that. And he felt a bit more, I don't know, like he believed, not like he believed himself, but like, maybe he thought, well, I'm playing well, if it happens, it happens, sort of thing. I think that's without knowing the lad, I think that's what I'd be doing anyway. Like, if I'm playing, I'm going to play to the best of my ability and do exactly what the manager wants me to do. Because that's what Wijnaldum did a lot at the time. And, you know, people say he's not, people try and do him down as not one of the greatest players and stuff like that because he doesn't score every week. But, you know, 11 players can't score every week, can they? So it's nice to have the options going there now.
It was either on, I don't know if it was on the post-match show or on Sunday Best, but they were saying about that it's kind of like, the most they've seen him just look like he's not second guessing, because if you're either injured all the time or coming back from an injury or worried about getting injured again, you've always got it in the back of your mind and you're always thinking, well, if I go in 100% on this, X might happen. And it seemed like that wasn't there, and he wasn't second guessing himself, and he was just like confident in his body and with what his body could do, which is nice. And if that continues, then that's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit on Milner then, Amelia. We're talking about, you know, Keita not having these standout moments. I loved James Milner's clip ball out to Trent for the opener, and I also loved him slapping Tsimikas. So there's two. Feel free to talk about either of those.
I think with Milner, obviously absolutely gets the job done and does what James Milner does. And I think there was a sense of, they talked about it a lot on the post-match show, about people kind of like the focus and the purpose that everyone had. And I think with Milner, he knows it's his last season with us. It is, isn't it? It's his last season
with us. Yeah, it will be, yeah.
That he knows that that's the case, and he would like to lift another big shiny thing again before he goes somewhere else, and, you know, doesn't have the same opportunity. So I guess the kind of like same highs that you get to have at a club like this and the moments that you get to have here. So I think that there's a sense of that, of he's got a purpose this season that will kind of be different to other seasons. Like, obviously, like getting to bring home silverware is really nice all the time, but if it's your last season with the club where you've gotten to do the amazing things that he has and where you've meant what he means to fans, you want to do it again. And I guess, like, obviously it's the first day of the season, so there's a long way to go, but I got that sense watching him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Covers the most ground as well, by the way.
Does
like,
he?
Of the whole play, of the whole Premier League, he's covered the most ground. I think it was like 12.65 kilometres.
Probably stayed out at half time.
He's an absolute monster, isn't he? He's about 48.
Yeah, yeah. Neil Dawkins said on Sunday Miss, he was like, I don't want to talk about father time in relation to James Milner. It's like, because you've got no right to, Neil. No right to at all.
Honest to God, you haven't. He's unbelievable, isn't he? Like, the performance he put in again, I thought... Some people were saying like he thought he was a bit slow to a few things. I think what they were referring to is the one where he got booked. He fucking knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
What I mean, the lad had just beat him and he took the lad out, takes the yellow card, absolutely no problems. The good thing about him as well is you got someone like Tsimikas playing who probably needs talking to a game. Van Dijk's staying next to him, so we'll do it. But he probably spends more of his time in that midfield area next to someone like a James Milner, and he gave him a slap in the face. But listen, he fully deserved it. What was he doing messing about? He'd had a good game, and he messed about there. But that shows you what type of fella Milner is. You know what I mean? He takes no shit from nobody. I know it's your first Premier League game, lad, but doesn't matter. Don't do that again.
Yeah.
And that galvanises everyone around him. And he's another one where it just shows you can pick a midfield for a game. That midfield's never going to play against Man City or Man United or Tottenham or Chelsea or anyone like that. But in games like that, it's absolutely sound. And it's sound because you've got a player like Milner who just tells the other two what to keep doing. Just keep going the way you're going now, that's fine. Or drop in here. And listen, father time catches up with us all, apparently except for him. And it wouldn't surprise me if he got another 12 months because as a utility midfielder, stroke fullback, he's probably irreplaceable, really. Like, you're not going to sign anyone... like you're definitely not going to get anyone the same age as him because he's so old, but you're not going to get anyone with the experience and the willingness to learn and the eagerness to help that you get from him. He's a fantastic player, and he's definitely our best ever free sign.
Absolutely unreal footballer. Okay, we'll talk about the defence. I'll stick with you, Kev. It's just boss to have Verge back. It was nice to have Joel Matip back as well, because you know he's been a long time out as well, but the pair of them, nice little clean sheet to come back to.
Van Dijk, just looking at him on the pitch, he's like, He just radiates calmness, doesn't he? There's not any can't do. You put him in front, he'd score goals, and there's no issue. And Matip, in the past, I've been a bit of a critic of Matip, and it's more down to the fact that he just can't get the run of games. But when he does play, he's fantastic, isn't he? I wanted Gomez to start on Saturday, but that's just because I love Joe Gomez. I think that's probably our best partnership with Gomez and Van Dijk. But Van Dijk and Matip is just... I don't think it just doesn't concede goals, does it? Doesn't make any silly mistakes. It just gets on with what it needs to get on with. And Joel Matip has had a great Liverpool career when you sort of package it all up. Instead of looking at it all like individually, because he's been out for so long in certain breaks, you look at what he's won and the games that he's played in and the performances he's put in. He's been a great centre half for Liverpool, and he was brilliant again on Saturday. And again, it's another area where you go, what a lot. Like, we've gone from literally an absolute drought last year in centre half. So at the moment, you're looking thinking, well, there's Kanate on the bench, there's Gomez, and Gomez was on the bench, wasn't he, the other day? And you're thinking to yourself, where are they going to get their chance? Now, obviously, they will, because as Mike said before, footballers get injured, and that's where we got hurt last year. But to have all four of them all ready to go on the first day of the season, if I'm anyone else in the league, I'm just looking, going, what happened to them last year is not going to happen again.
Yeah.
We've got a full squad. All have had a full pre-season except for what? Is it just the Brazilians, really? Basically, isn't it?
And Henderson,
who've had a full pre-season. And you just think, that all helps. You're talking about Keita before, trust himself a little bit more because he's had a full pre-season. Joel Matip, full pre-season. He's probably thinking, well, I can go. Like, you've got, it's my share to lose now because I've been in there from the first day of the season. And again, Neil said when we were doing like the pre-season previews about how if we win the first six or seven games, you might have teams just going, well, we've got no chance of catching these here. And obviously City have already lost one now. And I think our sixth or seventh game is them. So if we've won the six going into that and then we win that one, you can see teams going, well, there you go. There's the league on already. It's September.
Yeah, Kev makes a few really good points there I want to pick up on, Amelia, but the first one is remembering what Matip's done in a Liverpool shirt, because he starts the Champions League final with Virgil, obviously, and Virgil obviously loves playing alongside him, I mean, he loves Joe Gomez as well, and I'm sure he'll love Kanate eventually when he gets a chance to, but, you know, so we don't think necessarily Virgil's going saying, oh, I want to play with Joel, but he's certainly very happy playing with him. You know, he has fun with the no context Matip stuff, he literally got the t-shirts and stuff, but they obviously really really rate him as a player. And yeah, they've got that memory of winning the European Cup together with Madrid, and it wasn't just that game, that run, you know, arguably massive outperformance Van Dijk within that sort of 6 to 8 weeks in the build up to that. He's brilliant, and someone like Virgil will remember that, and he'll feel good playing, you know, coming back saying, oh, I've got my mate alongside me.
Yeah, I think with Joel Matip it was very much like a, you don't know what you've got till it's gone type thing. Do you know what I mean? That like I'd never been going, brilliant, yeah, Matip, whereas now every single time Matip is on the team sheet, I'm going to celebrate it like it's a goal, because I am that excited. But like genuinely though, obviously we were all going, oh, this is it, Van Dijk's going to be back, first game of the season, Van Dijk's back, and like an incredible recovery to be back for that considering the injury that he had. But I think we should be as excited by Matip being back, because he's brilliant and he gives me that same sense of confidence. Obviously no one gives me the same sense of confidence that Virgil van Dijk does, but we should have that kind of that sense of calm that you felt for most of the Norwich game. And I know they probably didn't have to do that much because they weren't called upon for that much, because there's not much that Norwich do that kind of gives them cause for much excitement. But it's absolutely brilliant to see him back, and I'm very excited by it.
Yeah, excited by the pair of them. And like Kev says, Mike, excited by all our options now, and it is quite a jump. You know, we talked at the top of the show saying basically, you know, of the front four, you know, pick any three of them sound. I was sort of like that with the centre half. So I'd love to have seen Konate start, because you think he's brilliant. Like Kev again, I'm praising Kev far too much here.
He's made some really good points, to be honest.
He's used them all by midday Monday though. I was gonna pick a mad tea tonight, so Joe Gomez, I love Joe Gomez as well. He basically could have picked any of them, Mike, and I would have been happy, but he picks the two and they keep the clean sheet, so as ever Jürgen knows best, even better than Kev.
Yeah, and I know this is a left back line, but proof is in the pudding with that. We've seen Tsimikas, you know, last season Robbo gets that injury last season, the last game before, you know, the season, everyone's like, oh no. It's like that, but this season, you know, a bit of a pre-season, everyone's going, all right, yeah, he looks all right. And then he's coming in, apart from the one where Milner has to give him a bit of a slap, he's just really solid. And the fact that I always used to hate people saying it about United when I was growing up. They had a really good spine, and, you know, you don't win nothing without a good spine. Rafa's team had a great spine, and we still didn't win something. But now we've got a combination of having a really, really good spine of the team, the best goalie in the world, best centre-half in the world, you know, arguably the best striker in the world, but you've got Fabinho as well. It feels like we're spoiled for choice in just having really, really brilliant players, no matter what we can do. And if they're available, then we're absolutely flying. And by the way, I think we'll start, time will reflect quite well on last season for us, I think. All right, we have that really horrible January, six games on the bounce losing, but, you know, we finished 18 points clear of City when we win the league on 99, and they finished 17 clear of us after we went through everything we went through. All right, we finished third, and United finished second, but we were top at Christmas. We went through that horrendous run. You know, we were about a good 10 points off top four, and we ended up finishing third. I think it's going to be really underrated. And it does feel as if, I think I said through the week, to be honest, it felt like people were sleeping on Liverpool a bit, apart from us. You know, we're obviously seeing it and thinking, well, we've literally just witnessed Liverpool, this greatest Liverpool team, win the European Cup and the Premier League in our last 5 years of our lives. You know, the World Club Championship, all that. We've literally witnessed a lot of these lads do that. We know what they're capable of. When they're fully fit, it's not going to be a surprise to anyone of us in here, or anyone going to the grounds or watching us all around the world who follow Liverpool. It's not a surprise to us, and it might be a bit of a surprise to the Premier League this season, and it shouldn't be, because we're the only ones who've had a proper go at City. We've took them all the way one season, and then with the disappointment, still going to manage to win one of the biggest club football trophy you can. We won the league the season after, and it feels as if all these players now will be like, look at that last season, and we still finished where we did, and watch us this season. And the fact that, you know, it's career ends and career threatening injuries, Matip and Van Dijk, really, to be honest, and Matip has his problems all through his career, really. But, you know, as you mentioned before, the Champions League game, he gets an assist for the Origi goal, that settles it. The maddest flick you've ever seen, perfectly weighted into Origi's path. People forget about that because, you know, who's that bothered? Once the ball's in the net, everyone's just having a lovely old time.
Upside down.
That sort of thing, when you think about it, like, to have the awareness to do what he did that night to settle that game for a centre half. I thought he was going to score at the weekend. Like, he was literally, there's a couple of times when he stayed up from a corner just thinking, oh, I'm having a lovely time here. I will score at some point. But imagine, like, I don't know, like, as you mentioned before, the depth you've got it just feels as if we've sort of cheated somehow. Because I know it's only pre-season when we've seen Konate, but he's the profile of a Liverpool centre-half. He's huge, he's quick, he's good on the ball. More of them, please, because, you know, we've seen and we've got physical proof in our team at the minute, haven't we, that they're great. So I can't wait. We're back in the ground, but I genuinely can't wait to watch Liverpool be as good as I know they can be this season.
That's right. You talked a little bit before about Mo Salah, Kevin's expectations almost so high of him, you know, that you don't necessarily take him for granted, but, you know, there's a standard there that you have to wow to get past. And I mean, we're getting similar places to Trent because we're 43 minutes in and we haven't even talked about him yet, and I thought he was great.
Yeah, again, with Trent, he's got to have... He does the things that he does, and it becomes second nature. He's not just a 7 out of 10 every weekend, he's an 8 or a 9 out of 10 every single week. And people criticised him last year a little bit, but it's because of the highs you've seen from him that when he does drop to a 7 or an 8 out of 10, you're like, what's going on there? And that should be a level as a footballer, but Trent's not just like any footballer, he's world class, and he's absolutely brilliant. And again on Saturday, it shows why they give him loads of space, and it's because we've got so many other players in the team where they're thinking, shit, if I leave him, I'm absolutely knackered. But with Trent, what he does is he bombs on from so deep, it's so hard to track him. Who tracks him? Because he starts next to your striker. And if your striker tracks him, then what's going on there? That's never going to work. So your winger might have to track him, but he's already gone by the time he gets there, because he'll play a little triangle with whoever's playing on the right side of the defence in the midfield. And because he's such a good footballer, not just an athlete, you know what I mean? He gets up and down the pitch, but it doesn't matter where on the pitch he is, he'll be able to play football with someone and you'll go, wow. But then he's got the delivery as well, and his delivery is it's unbelievable. And it's why I always think he should move into midfield. I'm not going to get into the discussion on here because I know a lot of people don't, but a player like him, he's another one, like I said, Van Dijk could play up front and score goals, as half a joke before. You could put Trent in goal and he'd be good, because he's just a naturally talented
looks
footballer.
Looks stronger this season as well, doesn't he?
He looks bigger.
I think he looks massive, massive set of shoulders on him. Even his legs seem to have grown. He's just like, I was comparing him to Curtis Jones to someone the other day, and I think Curtis Jones might be a little bit younger than him, but they're probably the same age. But if you stand them next to each other, Curtis Jones looks like Trent did 18 months ago, like sort of wiry, big and strong, but wiry and not necessarily fully filled out yet. So Curtis Jones will hopefully go through the same sort of transformation as Trent has at the moment. But that extra bit of power and that extra bit of beef on him this season, we'll probably see him go to another level. And if you think about the level he's already at, that's unbelievable.
I thought he defended quite well on Saturday. Like, it's always levelled at him, isn't it? Mainly from an England perspective, really. Which
I think
is,
that's a myth.
It is a myth, because he's got the best stats in the league last year for blocking crosses. And, you know, his positioning, I don't know what it is about some players. People just get it in the head to have an argument about some player sometimes. And that's obviously one with him that's rubbish. Like, he was cutting things out the other week. Literally Saturday, who am I? Getting excited there, aren't I? But he was cutting things out on Saturday, and I was like, well, what do people see? What are people missing? He's literally doing a right back's job while running the game and being our most influential like person on the ball. Yeah. And he's never ever hitting and hoping, he's always knowing what he's doing with his passes.
Again, the thing for Trent is the functional midfield really helps him, doesn't it? When you've got midfielders who know exactly what to do and when to go and when to sit, that really helps a player like Trent. And listen, he doesn't necessarily need it, and he probably doesn't necessarily need it against someone like Norwich, but in the bigger games, when you'll have Fabinho, Thiago and Henderson hopefully as the midfield three, you probably see that Trent weirdly has even more freedom, because he knows that if he's caught on the edge of their box, it's not a massive issue, because one of those three will have covered whatever needs covering in there. But having him have the ability to get up and down the pitch first is unbelievable, because it means we don't have to play any type of winger. Our winger is effectively the striker, who basically just stay up front. They don't necessarily track back that much, especially obviously you've got Manny who helps Robbo more, whereas Salah, between he works hard in probably the final third, but you don't necessarily see him getting back to the edge of our boxes. Maybe you would see with a Manny. So when Trent has more to do, he probably has more to do on his own as well, and I don't think he minds. I don't think it's not an issue to him. He's got the fitness, he's got the ability, he's got everything about him, plus he's got the love of being a Liverpoolian, playing for Liverpool as well. He's fucking great to see. I absolutely love him.
We'll finish on the keeper then. He's he's just unreal at the end. And like Kev says, it doesn't really matter, but it's brilliant to see. Yeah. He makes a decent save in 0-0 as well, it has to be said. I mean, you'd expect most keepers to sort of make it, but he's still got to be there, right position, sort of strong hands from Pookie. But that one at the end, I say one, that's 17 at the end. and then just palms it away to Trent like it's nothing, going,
that's a pass. It's a pass, isn't it? He goes, watch me just pass this with my hand. And then, there you go, we're off.
You're right, it doesn't matter, obviously, in terms of the result and the number of points you get from it, but it does matter in the sense you're going, yep, Alison Becker still doing Alison Becker this season, and that's good to see. And I just think, like, he's absolutely fucking unreal, isn't he? But, like, the dynamism and, like, the explosive power that it takes to get from down here to up here in, like, a fraction of a second is absolutely phenomenal. And when we talk about players that give us confidence and a sense of calm, and there was good chat about, I think it was on the post-match, or it might have been on Sunday Best, about how he compares to Pickford in terms of, like, his aura, his vibe on the pitch, that, like, that calm and, like, just the presence that he brings and the confidence that gives you compared to someone that makes you feel like manic and chaotic and scrambled. He never looks like that, even when he is literally making three saves in under a minute. He looks completely calm and collected, and he's just absolutely unreal, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely unreal.
And he's gorgeous as well.
Beautiful boy.
Yeah, they're all beautiful boys. They're all beautiful boys. Hope you've enjoyed that. Loads and loads of positivity. We're going to come back and have a little bit of a chat about Jordan Henderson's new contract, but obviously another thing that got a little bit of attention over the weekend with some of the chants that came from the Liverpool, and there's a bit of dialogue online over them. Cop Houts put out a statement, Liverpool Football Club put out a statement as well, condemning the chants, and I've seen a lot of confusion over how long Liverpool have been singing these songs, or chanting these chants, should I say, and why. So I thought it'd be good to get Paul on to explain their position, to explain the Cop Houts position, and why it is offensive to Liverpool's gay community. And so here is me and Paul talking about that, and then we'll be back to talk about Jordan Henderson and a couple of other little things that are broken today. And as promised, it is John Gibbons with Paul Aman from Cop Outs. And Paul, it's hard to know where to start, really, because it must be so disappointing for you, because it's supporters back in stadiums, which is what we all wanted. You know, you're seeing the pictures going down there, you're hearing on away end in fine voice, and it's making everyone proud, that you're making feel great, but also you're like, finally we're back. And then stuff starts coming through the telly that no one wants to hear. Well, I don't think anyone does want to hear, and must have been sort of so disheartening for you, really, having looked forward to supporters back in the ground. It felt like you were going back to a time that you'd moved on from.
Absolutely, John. I've, like all of us, had to put up with watching on the telly all the time for over a season, struggling to get any tickets when we were allowed back in part, and then to see us back properly at an away end, to see us scoring goals, absolutely brilliant. To hear proper songs being sung by our fans, absolutely fantastic. And then this little gut punch of some of our supporters choosing a really, really cheap, unnecessary, you know, chant that really has no space in modern football. We've got an amazing songbook of positive stuff. We've got so much more humour and class about us as supporters, as a club. To do that, it's just unnecessary. I mean, Billy Gilmour, class young lad, great player. He's just doing his best. As you know, we've got players out on loan. Do we expect them to face abuse? Mm. I don't in any way want to take away from any of the campaigns that and organisations that have had to put forward again and again complaints as to how they're treated as fans. You know, all offensive chanting, whether it's fans having a go at Liverpool fans with various presumptions about our work ethic or whatever, that's nonsense, that's unnecessary. Absolutely condemn that. But to hear on Saturday quite a few hundred of our fans chanting really quite offensive homophobic stuff in a way that has no place, it's just wrong. I've got LGBT plus friends who happen to be Norwich fans who were there, who were absolutely appalled, and there's no need for it, there's no space for it. And I just ask anybody who's sat next to somebody who's chanting there, they may not be realizing that that's quite homophobic and quite offensive. Just tap them on the shoulder and ask them to give their head a wobble. You know, there's no need.
I mean, you're talking there about some of the stuff that Liverpool have to put up with, and yeah, we shouldn't on occasion, and yeah, we have to do so much, but you know, we can speak out about that, but there's more we can do about what we do as our own behaviour, Paul. And I've been a bit frustrated by the, you know, well, what about this and what about that? And yeah, it's out of order. And yet, when I hear things like, you know, always the victims in ground, I get angry. But that's not to say that we have to stoop to the level of others. And that's not all to say that we can't police ourselves, really. And that's what this is all about, isn't it, Paul? And you've just mentioned that it's about, first of all, explaining to other people that what they're doing, they might not realise to be offensive, but it is. But secondly, realising that who we're actually upsetting here is a lot of our own community. And that's why I wanted to get you on, Paul, because, you know, I can't do anything about the fact that there's some Liverpool fans who might not care what anyone who supports Chelsea think. But we should care about our own. We should care about our own supporters and our own people. And I'd be mortified if anyone in our away end, you know, was made to feel uncomfortable. And I'm sure there would have been people from the LGBT community who in that away end, or as you say, you know, in the Norwich end, who were felt part of something and then suddenly felt excluded, and that's not on. And it was meant to be against everything we believe.
Yeah, and, you know, we've got some fantastic traditions as supporters. We don't take any nonsense directed at any one of our own that we see. And this is nonsense being directed at some of our own by some of our own. It's got to stop. It's really got to stop. People need to think before they chant. We don't chant racist nonsense. You know, we don't put up with that being chanted by any of our own. Homophobic stuff has got to be put in the bin as well. And you might not realise it's homophobic. You've had the opportunity to hear it out. You know that it offends us. So I just appeal and ask for my fellow fans, look out for our own. Because actually, we all want to enjoy the game. We all want to get behind our club and make sure that we beat anything that's put in front of us.
And just to sort of dispel a few myths as well, Paul, because I've seen a lot of people online saying, are we seeing it about Chelsea's loan system is the latest one, which I've not heard sort of before. The one I had heard before was the idea of well, Roman Abramovich throwing the money around and stuff like that. These are chants and songs that predate any of this, don't they? So it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't wash to say, oh, this is about a loan system, you know, as if, you know, that's kind of fine. These are chants that are deeply rooted in homophobia that have been part of football for far too long, and you know, it's not good enough to start trying and reclaim them as something else that they're not.
The chants have been going on for 30 years plus, and yes, we've been campaigning against them as cop-outs for the last 5 years. Other LGBT plus groups have been campaigning against them for years longer. We know that this is rooted in homophobia. It's rooted in accusations and implications of, you know, Brent boys and Chelsea players and perhaps, you know, Tory MPs. I don't really care what it's rooted in. The impact of it is homophobic. The impact of it is causing offence to our own fans as well as other LGBT plus fans out there. It's got to be stopped. And I just ask fellow fans, have a think about it. If you hear it, ask it to stop.
Something that really frustrated me, Paul, and angered me actually sort of even more so was the fact that, you know, at the moment in Liverpool, homophobic attacks are on the rise, and it's a distressing thing for me, and it must be an even more distressing thing for people who are sort of part of that community. To be quite frank, I'm sure there's a lot of people, you know, from the LGBT community in the city currently feel less safe than what they did 12 months ago, what they did a few years ago, and we're meant to be, you know, a city that looks out for each other. It calls itself sort of a left-wing city, but that means standing together with everyone. And it is a left-wing city, by the way, and it is a city that stands together, and that's what we do with our best, but that sort of means everyone. And I think, you know, at a time, as I say, when our gay brothers and sisters are probably feeling more frightened, they're probably feeling more vulnerable, now more than ever, we need to stand together.
We've had young kids, you know, in their teenagers, in their early 20s, being absolutely battered and left bruised and bleeding on our streets just because of who they are, because they're LGBT plus. It's got to stop. We've got to have more decent people step forward and knock on the head some of those attitudes that leads to that kind of hate. We've got a city that generally we can be so, so proud of. We've got people who stand up and be counted on so many good issues. And right now, LGBT plus people in our city need our allies to step forward, to show solidarity, and to really knock on the head any more of these attacks.
Yeah, let's all be allies to each other, and let's all support each other now more than ever. Paul, thanks so much for coming on. I wish it was in slightly different circumstances, but we'll get you on to talk about the Fussy very, very soon, I promise.
Fantastic, John. Look forward to it. Take care.
Thanks a lot to Paul for joining us at No Notice Whatsoever on Zoom. And hopefully that is educational for everyone. And hopefully all of us can have a little bit more of a think about what we do chant at Liverpool games. But back on to the lovely news. But a few things that broke today. It's worth noting Leighton Clarkson has gone out on loan to Blackburn Rovers, which feels like a really good move for him. If he does as well as Harvey Elliott did there, then he'd be fantastic. But I know he's held in very, very high esteem at Liverpool. And so best of luck to Leighton Clarkson on loan this weekend. We'll all be keeping an eye on it. There's a new third kit come out as well that I'll shock everyone. Virgil looks tremendous in. But some lovely, lovely news first thing, and I'll start with you, Kev, from David Ornstein. Now, I spoke to David earlier in the day, and that's going to go out as a little bit of a special. In fact, it should be out already, so if you want to hear David Ornstein on the latest on that, then do subscribe to the Anfield app, or if you already subscribe, you've probably already heard it. But generally, the gist is, Kev, that it's all but done, and that's great news because it was looking a little bit dodgy for a while.
Yeah, I think... there was a reaction of quite a lot of people, and people say, "Oh, don't worry, it's only a tactic, and it's only this, and it's only that." But I think the noise is coming out of the fact that Jürgen Klopp sort of put his foot down on this one and said, "No, this is what I want," and that probably speaks volumes about the Gini Wijnaldum case, really, doesn't it? Because I think he'd probably prefer Gini to stay, but ultimately he hasn't sort of thrown his weight about the club and said it, whereas the skipper gets into a situation where there's even a possibility of him leaving, and Klopp says no, he's one of the most important players here, we need him, and they've given him a contract that you probably would have said FSG wouldn't have really been in favour of doing. So he's at the age that he is, probably the amount of money that he's on as well, and listen, I've got no problem with it. I think he earns every single penny, I absolutely adore him, he's brilliant. It's great news for Liverpool because we've all through the show we talk about a functional midfield. That's exactly what Henderson is, but with that little bit of stardust sprinkled in, where you can put a 60-yard ball over the top onto someone's toe. And it's not just about the football with Jordan Henderson, is it? It's about everything else he gives you. What a great footballer, but what an even better man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a great captain for Liverpool, but just all round everything, like all his work with the the NHS and all that type of stuff, the stuff over when he was with England, and he's supporting the LGBT thing, you know, just everything about him. He's just a great fella. He just loves to take him out for a bevy. He doesn't even bevy, does he?
We'll have his, Kev.
Honestly, I would literally have his. Whatever he needs me to do, mate, I'll do it for him. And I'm made up. He's signed on his dotted line.
You'd imagine, Amelia, that all his teammates are made up as well. We've won a nice little run of new contracts, and anyway, it's worth saying it's not quite sort of finalised yet, but it looks like it's very, very close. And you'd imagine, you know, Jürgen's doing a few fist pumps today, like us, and his teammates are like, his way, because he is the leader of this team, as Kev says, and you know, long may that continue.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously it's how he plays, but it's what he brings to the pitch beyond that that is really important, and it's what he brings to the squad beyond that that's really important, kind of in spirit and body and mind. And I think that he's a player that, as you say, not just because of what he's done for Liverpool as a football club, but also Liverpool as a city, he should be allowed to leave however he wants, whenever he wants. And I know that it's a business, and I know that's not how it works, and I know that there's a lot of money involved in it, but I just think, yeah, the respect that he deserves and the kind of end to his career with Liverpool that he deserves to have, I hope that this means that gets to happen.
Yeah, and it should do, Mike. It's 3 years. There's an option of a fourth if he plays enough game, and that'll take him up to 35. And you know, a couple more leagues and maybe European Cup at that time. And as Amelia says, we send them off wherever. Like, so he can go back to Sunderland, or he can go to PSG or whatever. It'll be some Liverpool career by then.
Yeah, you know, rightly so, it'll already go down in history as is, but the bits that are unwritten at the minute are still to be found out, and I'm sure he can't wait to get back there, and you know, he'll want to lift trophies in front of the crowd, won't he, and do all the stuff that he's fought for, really. I mean, it wasn't handed to him on a silver platter, was it, his career, especially at Liverpool. You know, he's a bit of a struggle at start, but I don't what can you say about the man? He's superb, and maybe a little bit underrated as an actual footballer, still, like, by some quarters. I remember, like, when he first came onto the scene, he was like a little, he's just shy, wasn't he? Really shy. But he's obviously grafted to get where he is. He's really, really good. Everyone loves playing with him. And listening to him, you know, during the pandemic where there's no crowds, I would love to play next to Jordan Henderson because he just doesn't shut up. Like, it's just having like a big chat on the pitch as well as being very, like very praised. He loves praising people, yeah. But he absolutely rollick here if he needs to. And he's just an all round leader. And he's not just a leader because he's a great footballer. You know, we, as Kev mentioned before, passing, scores the odd goal when he needs to. Just what, like, yeah. Yes, please, and I'm glad it looks like he's going to sign it, and it makes a load of sense. It's just I'm glad to see he's doing sensible things.
He's a boss example for other players as well. Like, not just, and I don't just mean like as a model example. I mean as literally as a footballer. Mm. I mean, by the time he leaves now, he'll be in the club for 15 years, I think it'll be, and you wouldn't have to go that far back. I'm talking probably 2 or 3 mm-hmm. years to find people criticising him, and I'm not just talking a vocal minority, I mean probably 50-50 split,
yeah,
where you didn't know whether you
liked it. Did it in the ground?
Yeah. Well, like, you'd hear Neil arguing with him outside home baked. Leave it, Neil.
But it just goes to show you, though, because you wouldn't get that argument anymore. Mm, he's literally a Liverpool, he's a hero for everyone who goes, yeah, to match, and everyone can see what he does as a job. And for any player who plays for Liverpool, you can literally just point and say, look at the skipper.
Yeah.
For 8 years, you had half the crowd who thought he didn't know what he was doing. Mm. And then look at him now. And that's another thing where you can say to players, listen, there's nothing you can't do. Do you know what I mean? You play for Liverpool now, there's nothing you can't do.
And if you want to talk about like silencing doubters and kind of like, yeah, showing people with your own work, do you know what I mean? He's not done it any other way other than consistently just turning up and being absolutely fucking brilliant every single week, putting the work in, putting the hours in. And obviously, he will have felt like he had things to prove, but he's just done his job over and over and over, yeah, again, to a point where now no one can question what he does or what he brings or what he's brought.
Absolutely. A few more would be nice. I don't know if you've spoke to your mate Mo Salah, Mike. Have you got any inside scoop on when that's happening? But if you give him a bit of a nudge, like, you know, that'd be nice too.
Yeah, I think I might see if I can get myself a deal off on the back of his demands. You know what I mean? But he's up for a 3-year deal at Mo. Yeah, as long as I'm in it, I think he'll sign. But to be honest, as I said before, I think he loves Liverpool. I don't foresee there being a problem. I think it will be signed, and it'd be daft not to, because look at him, like, goals all over the place, going to be goals all over the place forever with him. So just get it done. Makes all the sense. I said before, doing sensible things. You know, Van Dijk's had a big injury, but he's essentially signed an extension. It's a 2-year extension, wasn't it? I think, but like they said, it's a 4-year deal. Yeah, sensible things with the best crop of players I've ever seen. And all right, there will be a decline at some point, but nah, not now. That's not for the immediate future. We've got a crop of really, really world-class players, and I'm just glad that we're doing sensible things and making sure we get to keep them.
And that we all get to watch them next week. Who knows, he'll be back in. A couple more midfielders, I think they're all giving up to that Chelsea game, as are we at the Anfield Wrap. But thanks a lot in the meantime for everyone for joining me, to Kev, to Mike and to Amelia, and obviously to Paul, who joined us on the Zoom earlier. Hope you enjoyed that. Do subscribe to the Anfield Wrap to listen to all our post-match content from the weekend, but also that exclusive chat with David Ornstein about his exclusive in The Athletic. Wonderful time. Subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. Up the Reds. Have a lovely, lovely day. Podcast Network.